break after this hour or so. So, anyway, here on that slide, by the way, these slides are also translated into English and you can find them in Moodle. So if you want to follow PowerPoint, then English translation is in Moodle. And the code for this class is PRT019. And then regarding doing Genogram, I'm not going to let you home today without you knowing how you need to do it. So don't worry about it. We'll talk about how to make a Genogram for next time. Do not worry. And please be also responsible, because, you know, for me, this is a familiar topic. For you guys, it might be a new thing. So it's also your responsibility to understand this and to ask if you need questions. Now we'll get to the real topic. First of all, we think about Christian background. So first we need to talk how different levels of ministry or helping works in a church. And the most general level is how we think about helping, how we think about soul care. What do we talk about in our sermons? Do we tell in our sermon that person is sinner, and if you live like this, then God is angry with you? Or if I do like this, then you make mistakes? Or if I do like, if you do like this, then you are, you know, live in this world and God's wrath can come on you, etc. There are actually congregations like this. And since you mentioned Ukraine today, just 2 days ago, I was I spent some time in, I had coffee with my Ukrainian friend who came from Ukraine, and she was in the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. And she said that this makes me so uncomfortable, because they're always pointing fingers in my church. You don't live correctly, be aware. And also, last time when I was teaching this class, then of course it wasn't this Ukrainian topic yet, the war hadn't started yet. So I don't know if we have time for that today, but I'm still trying to touch upon this trauma experience today that relates to Ukraine. And next time in February, I also want to talk about grief to some extent. So I think we'll be able to touch this topic, topics about grief, about grieving, about trauma, etc. But now, how do we think about soul care? Do we think that God is angry? You know, since, you know, he's holy, he doesn't tolerate sin, etc. So, but even if you fail in your life, can he still receive you and forgive you? Maybe, let's say that you have divorced. Are you like a second-class Christian then? You cannot work in church anymore or be useful. Maybe you're no good for God's kingdom. Or maybe, just as divorce is sin, also, you know, envying in your thoughts, your neighbor's car is a sin, or in your thoughts, you know, being bitter toward my employer, maybe this is also a sin. in God's eyes, is one sin bigger than other? Or maybe if homo, gay, or hippie comes to my church, or homeless person, and already if we say, you know, I mean, how do we think about, do we judge people? Or maybe every person is welcome. Can every person experience God's love? Or maybe the door is shut for some people. I personally work in prison, and in my Russian service, I have one person coming who's a lifer. 1 year ago, I had two lifers serving life sentence. One of them actually got out. He was in prison for 38 years. But other prisoners called him grandfather, yeah? And he was able to learn Hebrew, and he took Bible class. Yeah, his name is Oleg. You can read his terrible story from media, but I can tell that I saw him as a believing man. When he got out from prison, then journalists met him at the gate. I cannot speak what happens in the prison, but what you can Google from internet is public information in media. That I can share. So at the gates of prison, journalists met him and wanted to do interview with him. And he said, I'm actually pretty young. He's more than 60 years old. I'm pretty young. My Christian life started 18 years ago. That's what he said to journalists at the gate when he got out from the prison. Now, if a person like this, he didn't get this sentence for a small thing. But is this person welcomed in our church? Or maybe there's a temple on his forehead, you know, candidate for hell. So this is the basic level, foundational level that I talk about. How do we think about people? How do we think about God? How do we think about grace? Maybe there's more grace to some than others. So this is something that is not written in any programs, but this one we can see from, you know, in people's attitudes. And in a Bible study or sermon, you may not even talk about it directly, but maybe you still give certain attitudes. A person who maybe smells bad and doesn't look good, a homeless person, do we ask him to have coffee with us or to church? So this is the foundation level where everything else is founded. This is where we can all think how in our faith community, in my faith community, how do we think or how do we relate to, you know, failings? How do we treat those who have problems? I have seen churches where, you know, a minister or worker who has gone through divorce, people keep away from them like a leper. They're afraid of them. If I speak to him or her, maybe also I become a sinner, or maybe somebody thinks that I am in favor of divorce, things like this. There are a lot of different situations, and old sins are being brought forward that the person has long ago repented from and been forgiven from God. But because this is a big sin in somebody, one other person's eyes, then, you know, it is being brought up again and again. No. No, so that was the foundation level. But now we talk about an informal level, informal pastoral care. And this is where, for example, let's say that mothers helped you cake make cakes for their children's events in the church. And let's say that one mom tells another, I have this situation now in my life. And the other one listens and supports her. This is the first informal level. Also, in this level, then can be a certain training or certain education. Let's say that you're leading a women's ministry or youth group, but often in many churches, nobody is being trained or educated. They just see that, oh, you're a nice person, be a leader in this area. And then you just try to swim somehow. What I've also noticed is that maybe the biggest problem is with youth ministry, that often youth leader is just, somebody's appointed to be a youth leader who is just, maybe seems most appropriate. I was 17 when I became a youth leader in my church, and I didn't have any experience really, and I had to be leader for other youth. But these teenagers tell stories, for example, that somebody had been raped, or that somebody's father was, you know, alcoholic and he didn't want to go home, or somebody was bullied in school. I don't have anything to wear, etc. So what would 17 or 18 year old youth leader can offer soul in a soul care sense to somebody who's 2 years younger than he or she is? So our logic is that youth leader needs to be young and, you know, a good, maybe funny person even. But myself, having been youth leader, I've heard these stories, a lot of them. And I'd say that actually a mature Christian, mature believer should be youth leader and who can love these broken youngsters. So this is this informal level. And here in the end, also we read that many self-help groups have been started like this. It mentions anonymous alcoholics here. Somebody has been fighting, battling with an addiction, has gotten out from it, and then gathers a group of people like him with similar background and tries to help them. So this is the level for informal pastoral care. Now, second level is lay pastoral care. Here, you know, more concrete people are being selected and trained in a church, and they receive certain training or preparation. And also an interesting example here from England, Stephen Ministries. This is intentionally kept very informal. But these people in Stephen's Ministries have received training, and they visit other members in church, or maybe elderly people at homes or nurseries. So this is more intentional. And the next one is formal planned model, third level. Here, you know, there's an appointed person who will receive people for counseling at certain times or for pastoral care. Lutheran Church has family center in Tallinn. I myself also work in a counseling center called From Friend to Friend in Tartu. So we already have these Christian centers here where people are being received and given counseling. For example, where I work in this center, people can plan, schedule online slots for meeting counselor and how much they need to pay, etc. then they meet at a certain time. We serve young people for free, or people who are not able to pay. But those who can, grown-ups who can pay, they pay for this. So these are the different levels. She said also, she's not going to read out all these slides, but you can read them yourselves. These slides are in English too. David Benner has expressed these levels visually, like you see here on this slide. Let's say that you have a friend that you're hanging out with, doing sports, training together, whatever, and through this friendship and your activities, you support each other, you know, in your, through your experiences. So that's the Christian friendship. Number, a second one is pastoral ministry level. This is where we really, you know, see who's around me. Can I help and serve somebody in a church or in a nursery or somewhere, nursing home? And also social help is there. Maybe I'm helping somebody with clothing or taking food to somebody. And then the next one, more to the center, is pastoral care. Behind the pastoral care, counseling, spiritual guidance, yeah, are in the middle, in the center. So pastoral counseling is more listening and giving counsel. And the second part, spiritual guidance, is more maybe common in American culture, where people are used to, you know, talking to a pastor, to a spiritual role model, you know, that people go and seek guidance, more almost like mentorship, but in spiritual sense. How can I spiritual guidance, how can I better develop spiritually? All these texts, actually, she has translated from English, but the spiritual guidance is the English word. Now some other terms. I often experience that people mix up terms, notions. For example, if somebody says that I'm a psychologist, I say I'm not a psychologist, I'm a theologian. And also this, let's agree on these terms. Pastoral care is supporting a person, and person is seeing as a whole. And today as well, I'm using the word assisting, pastoral care or pastoral assisting. Now the second one is counseling. Yeah, is something even more specific. It's one or a few times to somebody who needs counseling. This is appointment based. And I also have seen that people mix up these terms. So let me emphasize that there are three different things: psychology, psychotherapy, and psychiatry. Psychology is a scientific approach to human reason, mental state, character, and behavior. While psychotherapy uses psychology's methods, is a long-term process, and the purpose is to change person's behavioral or communication patterns. And the third term, psychiatry, is a whole different animal. This is a branch of medicine that treats mental disorders and studies person's brain, basically. Since in church circles, I've noticed so many times that people mix up these terms, then I just wanted to make that clear. Now, family counseling is solution-centered, single or repeated meeting with the family. Therapy, as I said, is a longer process. It may take 10 or more times, you know, sessions. it's not like in school that I give knowledge, but no, I meet people who tell me that I've read these things from the books. Then they have this mental or reasons level, but also the other one is hearts or emotional level. We may not be able to put in practice what we know intellectually, and therefore therapy helps to process these things. And to bring things from intellectual level to heart level. And it's really hard, actually. It's a hard process because we have our internal behavior patterns that are so, you know, strong that I may know what is the right thing to do, but to change my behavior, it can be very, very hard. And I tell to my patients that, let's say that it's almost like you have this certain path, you know, through field, very tall grass, but since you have been gone so many times, taking this path, then there's a road there. But now when you try to change your patterns, then you're the first one to go through this, tall grass, and you are trying to find your way, and it's really inconvenient, and you may get lost there even. That's why people say that I know what's, even like in addiction topic, they say, I know what's the right thing to do, but I still fall to my previous past patterns. Now let's talk about person's lifespan. Let me ask first, maybe you all know about this and we don't need to cover this. Meeli Tankler is teaching soul care here in the seminary. Maybe you all have talked about this. So some people have learned this, but not all. Some are enlightened and some need flashlight. But so let's talk about it very briefly, because there are some developmental theories, you know, help us to really lay foundation. So yeah, we need foundation for building a house. So we talk about tasks in your life in different stages of your life. Just yesterday, actually, I talked to a person who said, I don't know why my child is behaving strangely. He said, 2 years old, crying, etc. And for this person, I don't know if I'm not a good parent to my child. But when you think now, what is the development task of this 2-year-old child? Baby first needs to experience trust, or hopefully he or she has mother who receives them. But if the baby doesn't have mother, then this is really, you know, hard, situation. And later, it's really hard for this person to trust anybody and even trust God. So if there is not this affectionate relationship with parents, especially with mother, you know, during the first year, then this also influences your relationships later in life with others and also with God. So you can tell that this person whatever he wants later, but he or she has had this experience. And he's more insecure because of this. Now the second one is toddler. Toddler, first little infant doesn't even realize that he or she is separated from mom. But in toddler's phase, baby realizes that he or she is a different entity from her mother, from his mother. And their own wishes become evident. You see in the children, you see on the street sometimes children, you know, behaving and lying themselves on the street and misbehaving. And even myself as a mother, I was embarrassed about this, you know, when I had little children. But when I learned in school, then I realized that this is actually that in this is his still a mental task. You know, and sometimes an older woman on the street goes to teach young mothers, you can not let your child do this and this or that. I don't know. I mean, I've seen this on in the street many times when older ladies go and teach young mothers, and it's not helpful because this parent in this moment is already afraid. How can I deal with my child? Or how can I, you know, get out from this store with my crying, yelling child? And if you yourself in this situation, then just try to remember that this is a developmental task of your child to realize that he or she is separated from parent, and he doesn't do everything you want him to do. Now, next phase is a preschool phase, 3 to 5 years old. Have you seen these little 3 to 5 years old to do all kind of things, take books out from shelves and climbing everywhere and breaking things in house, etc.? His task or her task is to discover the world around them. They need to find initiative. They want to invent things. That's their task in this phase. And if they're not able to do this, then there's a negative outcome, which is passivity and guilt later in life. That's how passive people come, or who have a lot of guilt. No, don't go, don't climb on a tree, don't mess with the dog. So this little person wants to try out everything. But if you limit them too much, or even maybe humiliate or shame them, then at one moment later in life, this person, you know, will become passive and guilt, have a lot of, maybe you have met grown-ups who have big guilt. You know, they say, I don't know, I mean, I cannot do this. I wonder what my employer thinks about this. I better not do this or that. And I've seen these adults who are almost like paralyzed even in their workplace. They do bare minimum, but not more, because who knows what can happen. Next phase is younger school age, 5 to 10 years old. That's where they learn new skills and self-management, self-motivation. If you've seen children in this phase, and sometimes, I mean, I have my living room is turned upside down. There are all these houses and things, spaceship, and everything has been done in my living room by my little children. And then I think, okay, relax. This is the task of their life right now. They need to take initiative. But because if children don't be able, we're not able to fulfill this task, then later they feel inferiority. They have lack of competence. So if they cannot practice all these things, then if they go to school later, how can they do all these things, crafts and other things? How can the person become engineer later if he's not been able to, you know, make these spaceships out of cardboard as children? Now the next phase is adolescence, 11 to 14 years old. They are trying to find their identity in that phase, and they may experience confusion. They wonder, am I trustworthy? Am my friends trustworthy? What do I like? What I don't like? Young people in this age group, they often share their clothes, styles, try out different styles, listen one type of music, then they change to another type of music, hang out one group of friends and then with other group of friends. So it's very important actually that who am I? This is the time when youngster also starts faith journey and starts to really trying to find their religious faith identity. So it's a very important time to address these spiritual needs. Next one is young adult, 15 to 25, a bit before and a bit after becoming adult. Where do I belong to is the question here. Do I have friends? In this phase, friends are a lot more important than family. Do I have like-minded friends? Also intimacy and, you know, relationships with opposite sex. And if this person doesn't find their company, it doesn't mean that they definitely have to find, you know, a spouse, or but they have to find friends and like-minded people. Otherwise, they will be very lonely. But the good news also here is that they're also, I mean, let's say that they find their groups, their group based on their hobby, then that's also helpful. And church or congregation can also be a great group for those who haven't found their place yet, you know, young adults. And then the next phase is middle age. A person needs to do something, their grown-up age. Some people get children in this phase, but not every person. I mean, every person needs to find, you know, what is their profession, what do they want to achieve in this life. And if I don't fulfill my life goals, then they feel stagnation. Maybe you have seen people who are just somehow trying to get by, but they have no goal. And then the next phase is older adult, or getting older. Now the question is, can I put, you know, other thing that I have experienced in my life, can I put it together, integrate to one part? Or do I experience that the whole life has been pointless and then I have despair? And here people who don't have this crystallizing and who cannot, you know, accept, you know, that life is only so long, then some people will die. And then, but maybe through health failures or whatever, they will start realizing the, you know, the that life it doesn't go forever. And here you can also see that some people, you know, try to imitate wisdom there. They give slogans, but you really, if you don't talk to them, they don't have cohesive philosophy, because they have not really have been able to put together their previous life experiences. Now we'll talk about family life cycle, which is also connected to the same topic of lifespan. So here the question is, how a person, I mean, first, normally in a family, we have man and woman. And now we'll talk about time, the time outside of their work, their time, you know, as a family and as a couple. Next one, when a child is being born, and see what happens to their time. And in some families, not even this. Baby may take the whole cake, so to speak, and they have no time for their, you know, to spend as a couple anymore. If you have given birth, have had baby, then as a mom, you're happy if you can take shower for 10 minutes, and you may have to fight for that to get to bathroom. And maybe you still hear that baby is crying. And some parents, you know, they think that they cannot leave their children, you know, without attention, not even for a moment. So they don't take any more time for, you know, for themselves or for, you know, for them as a couple. When I had my second child, when he was coming, then I realized that in order to maintain my sound mind, I decided to take a babysitter to survive. Since my man is working with in the area of agriculture, then during summer season he's away a lot because of his work, and that's why I had to spend a lot of time just with my children alone. But when I took babysitter, then first I had big guilt. What kind of mother am I? I go to cafeteria for 2 hours with my friend, and my baby now is spending time with babysitter for 2 hours. What kind of a mother am I? That's what I thought. So I had guilt. But this has been my development. So how to take even this little part from this cake for personal time? And from my own experience and from my clients' experiences, I've seen that if you don't take this time for yourself, then you can be very diligent parent, but also pretty mean and nervous. At one point, you will burn out. You use up all your energy. And if you don't receive any other energy, anything that charges you, my boys are now 10 and 7 years old. And even until now, you know, they don't always sleep the whole night. They haven't been very good sleepers over the years, and often I have to be up at night, you know. So it's vital for you to have at least small part of the cake from your time, and also another time, part of time for your couple, for you as a couple with your spouse or partner. And if you don't do this before they go to school, then it can even, you know, ruin your couple relationship. And if you have more than one children, then this time goes even longer. Now, next one, child goes to school. And maybe from the second grade, they understand that they need to take responsibility and go and do their own things. And maybe in the first grade, they're still all over, but there you see that. There's a wrong word here in Estonian slide. But anyways, here I realized that as a parent, I get some new time for myself. And now the question is, have I kept this little part for my couple time? Like, and can I go back to this, or hasn't been such a big crisis all the time? And that's why some couples want to break up in this phase, because they are so exhausted. Often people don't break up in the phase of where their children are small, but rather later when their children go to school. And then they ask, why am I living with this person? Why? We haven't been talking to each other for years. But because earlier you were taking care of children all the time and you didn't even analyze or think about your relationship with your partner. But now you start thinking about these things when your children are in school. Why I'm telling this? Because I've seen this so many times, these processes. And lots of intentionality is needed here to fight for your, you know, own time and for your couple time. And children don't give anything for free, but you have to be courageous and put your child to kindergarten or with babysitter and take time for yourself. Now, the next one is family with an adolescent or teenager. A child is looking their identity, where they belong to, friends, etc. And then you have even more time for yourself and for your partner. And that's also a time when earlier, maybe the couple didn't think what will happen to us. And now here, you have a lot of time to rethink. Are we a couple still or not? Can we be together? Do we want to be together? But also this stage often brings crisis into family. The classic is that teenager starts to rebel, but often they bring forth these processes that have been hidden until then, and he just, you know, amplifies those. So some things start to rise to surface that have been kept under surface earlier. Because here you have this rebel here at home, and he dares to say to your face what he doesn't like about his family. And this is also very challenging to parents this time. And last, empty nesters. Your child will go out from your home, and I've also seen that, especially where there are more than one child in family, then sending out the little one, the smallest one, to college, it's very hard for parents. Normally, parents send them away to university with tears. So empty nesters face. It can be a sad moment for parents. And that's the same thing, that you're back in the starting point now as a parent. And this also, you know, says to you that it's a full circle now. You have gotten older. It says about you that you have gone older. You have raised up your children and now you have empty home. You know, that you dreamed about, you know, when your children were little. Now you have this free time. But for some couples, this is a critical time because they don't stand being just two of them, and then that's when they break up. It's hard to understand that maybe a couple has been together 20 years, everything has been working. Why did you break up now? But because child gets out from the picture, maybe child held certain balance, but when the child is gone, then these two grown-ups are just all alone by themselves, and there is no mediator, and that can be hard to stand. And I've also seen when the last child goes out from home, then one of the parents maybe gets a health concern or depression. So it can take a toll on parents, especially if the child has had this mediator's role. I believe you all want to have lunch now. I had to let you have lunch, but maybe you have one fast question first. He says, one of the goals for us also is to serve and minister to people. You have been working as a chaplain in Tartu prison. So my question is, what have been the main things for you that help you to protect yourself, your relationship, your family? I used to also serve in another prison voluntarily. But how to protect myself and my family so there wouldn't be, I don't know. He was serving in women's prison, and how to protect yourself from relationships, you know, with, and we have seen even spiritual leaders whose families have fallen apart. So do you have good tips how to protect your family and their relationship? She says, will I give very fast answer or do we take lunch and then we'll do the other option?